Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
And welcome to episode 371 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Joe, joined by Todd. Todd, how are we doing on this glorious day?
Fantastic. Hardly any snow here.
Oh, now see, don't get me started on that.
Or shows. Snow or shows. It doesn't matter.
I would trade it all for an edit button.
Oh, I got the 280 characters, baby.
Give me 20 characters and I could edit them.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Right. But anyway, enough of the nonsense that we talked about on Twitter. Nobody follows us on Twitter anyway. Twitter's a dying medium now that everyone has 280 characters. We're talking about a real medium that's burgeoning. Print comics.
Yes, that's right. The future is now.
Right. Well, the future is now. This actually turned out to be a very big day in news. We do have some errors in some print comics that directly relate to this show.
Mm-hmm.
A lawsuit that stretches from two things that people who read comics probably enjoy, which is video games and energy drinks.
Mm-hmm.
We have conventions. We have another big story that we're going to be talking about as well.
Yeah. Somebody got traded. Trade news.
Right. We have convention news with the return of a game that we haven't done in a while with one of the conventions this happening weekend. Mm-hmm. Digital sales and freebies, which we'll get into there. What we read from this past week, which is Captain America number 695 and Archie number 25. What we're most looking forward to coming out this week. Todd's Art Attack, which I think you have more of a story to tell from one of your sketches.
Yeah, I have a finishing up of all the New York Con stories.
Okay. We have Todd and Joe have issues with the Flash Iron Heights one-shot. We also have movie and TV talk, where we're going to be discussing at length the spoilery-filled talk of Thor Ragnarok, as well as Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and Walking Dead, and maybe an in-depth discussion in regards to the future of TV talk.
Mmm. Shake-up time.
Right. Oh boy, you ain't kidding about shakeups. But before we get into the big news, the recent purchase that Todd made, that others may have made as well, the Justice League International Omnibus number 1, apparently had a few mistakes in it, Todd.
It did.
Now, so it turns out that there was a word balloon or two that were just left empty. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple pages out of order. And when I say a couple, I mean two.
That's enough for a $100 hardcover.
Right. Now, did you notice these things? Because did you crack this puppy open and read it?
No, it's actually still in the cellophane in my house. So I have not opened it. Because I don't know if you know this, I may have read these issues once or twice. So I didn't get around to opening it or even putting it on the shelf. It's still actually sitting on my dining room table as we speak.
So has there, and they've done this in the past when books have gone out in error,
mm-hmm.
that they call for a recall of the books to be pulped,
mm-hmm.
and they issue new ones. Do you think they're going to do that with this?
Yes. Because there's no way that you can let stand a $100 hardcover being messed up. I remember it when they did it with the Crisis on Infinite Earth. I think it was the hardcover slipcase back in the day. That never got to retailers.
Okay.
That was pulped beforehand, but I think they've done it they did it on a Hawkman something, and it cost somebody their job. So heads are going to roll on this. And no, it did. It literally, like, they had to pulp books, and it cost them a lot of money, and then they had to fill those orders. And it was like, you're fired. You're supposed to proofread this stuff. You're supposed to look it over. Now, granted, unless they have, you know, proof that it was like, all right, this is what we sent off. Whatever the printer did, you know, that's not me. But I do think I'm going to get something from our local retailer saying whether or not you have to return the book, because they're so heavy, they might just say destroy them.
Right.
Because why send them back to Diamond or wherever? But I do think we're going to get replacements, because and a lot of people might not even know I'd be up in arms if I didn't know. You know what I mean? Like, I just found this out and I was like, oh my God, I kind of want a replacement now. So we'll see what happens.
Well, I will say this. Apparently, it's not an isolated incident.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, there were recent reprints of the Kyle Rayner Green Lantern run.
Okay.
That they just recently put out a trade of the first stories of Kyle as Green Lantern.
Okay.
And one of the recent reprints of the mid-90s Deathstroke stuff.
Okay, yes. The
Marv Wolfman stuff.
Yep, Deathstroke the Terminator, when they could call him that.
Right. So apparently those two trades that also came out last month also had pages out of order.
Somebody's getting fired.
And those have already been recalled.
So now this might have just been caught, and now they have to recall them.
Right. So one time I'll give you. I say that all the time. Two times, we're going to call it into question. Three times, as you mentioned, heads are going to roll. And I could see on like a couple trades of like reprinting material from the mid to late 90s that is very niche. And not to say that a Justice League International Giffen DeMott is, who's the artist guy you like? What's his face?
Kevin, I do sketches McGuire.
I just wanted you to say his name. But something like that, while also a niche product, that's a much larger, much more costly product.
Yes, it is.
Oh, that, my goodness.
That is a heavy, heavy book, Joe. Yes.
So yeah, that's a bad month. That's a bad month there for DC. I hope they could turn it around later in this news segment.
Oh God, I don't think they can. You need a big get to do something like that. Right. But anyway.
Well, one thing that they won't be getting, Todd, is books with a similar name to energy drinks.
What?
Like, if they had a book coming out called YJ Stinger or something. But no, apparently, Monster Energy Drink Company, which has a monster truck and everything, are suing Marvel over their current Monsters, Monsters Unleashed book?
Yes.
One, because they're Monster Energy Drink, and two, in their ad campaign, it says Unleash the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
In the filing, it says that Monster Energy was damaged by the registration of the application in Monsters Unleashed trademark that they claim they own. They also claim that Monsters and Unleashed together, or at the very least a combination of these, are well-established and long famous before Marvel allegedly used these two words together.
Except they have like a magazine from the 70s called Monsters Unleashed.
Right, which I don't think that's by Marvel though.
It was, I think. That was during the Marvel magazines when they had that's how they got around the comics code. Oh. And they didn't have to say Zuvembi anymore.
Or what was it? They spelled zombie with an X or something?
No, it was Zuvembi was the word.
But wasn't there... Oh, no, there was a DC in Milestone. There was a zombie with an X. It was X-O-M-B-I. Yes. That's what it was.
Right. Don't be confusing your Zuvembis versus your X-Zombies.
Right. So, while the book is going... This case is going to trial, if you look at the sales in the book...
Mm-hmm.
I think it would just behoove Marvel to cancel the book, because I think Cullen Bunn, who was the writer on it, has already left the book. It's being taken over by Justin Jordan, who's a good writer in his own right as well. But I think at this point, they should just cut their losses and not even bother with the lawsuit.
I think so. I think they should just call it a day and move on.
Yep, let this be a lesson to you.
Yep. What I'm really worried about is how this is going to affect DC's future project, the Gorilla City Monkey Milk miniseries. And, like, are we still going to get that? I have some people on the inside who are like, we don't know if we want to put this Monkey Milk miniseries out. Grodd versus Saliver, you know. But
over the precious monkey milk from some sort of tree or some sort of electric something or other that they found.
Yes, it's down there, and they're like, the god of the Gorilla City, the milk of the monkey.
Well, sadly, I think Stan has, sadly, more pressing matters these days.
Well, okay.
Sadly.
Sadly. Should I write that down?
Nah.
All right, we'll move on. Do we have any other stories left?
We do, actually. So, when I woke up this morning, Tuesday, as we're recording this,
right,
I had no news stories, and I had to do a bunch of combing, right? Mm-hmm. Looking for something to talk about. I had a whole bunch of other stories. I'm like, these things are kind of related. We can sort of talk about these.
Todd got an omnibus. We could talk about that.
Right? I know Todd buys big books. I'm a dumb guy. I could talk about big books. So what I do is I grab all the links and I send them to myself in an email to work, super secret science job, and then I compile everything together and go from there. So I get to work. I'm running a little bit late because I had to stop for gas and so forth. And I don't immediately check my phone. I get to work at 9:30, and I'm messing around. I'm putting the email together for Todd as I'm waiting for all my systems and everything to boot up. And then I have to give a shout-out to follower and person who continues to keep the sticker-verse pin debate alive by throwing patches in there as well. I'm okay with patches. I've talked enough about pins to save me at least for this week. Let's talk MOTU, which is Master of the Universe.
Mm-hmm.
At 9:39 in the morning, they send me a tweet that at first I thought was a joke. Right. I thought they were messing around. I thought they were trying to rib me, as as Todd knows, I could take a gentle ribbing with the best of them.
Mm-hmm.
As it turns out, Todd, let me read this tweet from DC Comics.
Okay.
We are beyond thrilled to welcome Brian Michael Bendis exclusively to the DC family with a multi-year, multifaceted deal. He's one of the premier writers in the industry, having created so many unforgettable stories wherever he's been, and we can't wait to see what he has planned for the DC universe.
What?
Todd. Honest to God, I thought it was a joke at first. I'm like, why is this tweet from DC in this weird blue font?
Mm-hmm.
What's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. And then as the day goes on and the day goes on more, it's just like, oh, man, this is real. This is something that we've talked about on the show, that if something like this happened, which it never would, mm-hmm. that it would be a game changer.
Okay.
And folks, guess what?
It changed the game?
A lot of people around me have been having conversations about this today,
mm-hmm.
and I've been doing my best to just be like, oh, that's a good one. Oh, okay. Because I wanted to take all this in and save all my thoughts for the show, of course, right?
Right.
Oh, my goodness. So,
just let me say really quick that I had a busy day today.
Yes.
And I'm running around. I'm doing stuff with health insurance, blah, blah, blah. I'm jam-packed with stuff, which rarely ever happens. So I look down at my phone at about, I don't know, 10:30, I think. I don't exactly have the time. And I'm like, oh, the email's here. Joe has sent me the show notes. Haven't been on Twitter, haven't hit my news feed on the phone that has all the news sites that I hit. And I'm like, oh, well, just let me look. And I'm like, all right, well, you know, I think, you know, we're going to talk about this. We may lose a few news things. And I'm like, what's he talking about? And I look down and I'm like, holy crap. Like, literally, that's what went through my mind. And that's immediately what I emailed back. And I think I looked on Twitter, and that's what you actually emailed or Twitter tweeted out, was like, holy crap. I was like, this can't be true. I'm the same way. I'm like, This is, why is Joe sending me fake news at 10:30 in the morning? So, but I was the same way. I was at the comic shop throwing stuff around today, talking with, you know, DC legendary artist Tom Derenick was there, and we were talking about all this stuff. And I was like, now I forget, who was I arguing with that I believe that this could happen someday, but someone told me that they, it'll probably never, was it Joe or was it Tom? I forget. But either way, Todd's right, because I called this a long time ago.
So. Did you call this?
Yeah, I said that he'll go over there. They'll get him with... Now, nobody said what book he's going to do. They dangled Batman in front of him. That's the book that, no matter who you want, that's the one thing DC always has in their back pocket that you could say, oh, Spider-Man's great. You could say this character's great, that character's great. For 99% of the creators in this industry want to do Batman at some point in their career. He's the big character, and they dangled him in front of him. Brian Michael Bendis, I'm not saying right out of the gate, but he will get Batman at some point.
Okay. Well, let's get into all of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Bendis's Twitter, of course, is just like him retweeting all the comments and the congratulations and everything else like that. And then he just ends it today. I don't know if you saw his tweet where he just says, okay, now, which one is Clark?
Oh boy, yeah, I saw that.
Now, we have talked about Brian Michael Bendis quite a bit, actually, on the show over the last 12 months, I'd say. And just in general, because he's one of the biggest names in comics.
Mm-hmm.
And he has been an exclusive at Marvel for the better part of the last, what, 15 years?
17 years. He was there. I was reading in the article today. It was 2000. He started working there.
Right. Now, 2000 is when he started working there, and he's been making stuff for them ever since, but he didn't sign the exclusivity because he was still doing stuff at Image, and like here and there he was doing bips and bobs and drips and drabs, whatever. But while many can malign a lot of his recent work for various reasons, we have even done so here today, there are very few names in comics in 2017 that can move the needle.
Mm-hmm.
Todd and I ourselves always say, when it's a new book coming out from, you take your pick. You say you're Jason Aaron's, you say you're Ed Brubaker's, you say you're Brian K. Vaughn's, people like that.
Mm-hmm.
Those are movers and shakers, of course. But Todd and I represent a very small sample of the comic book reading populace. There's a much larger comic book reading populace out there that names like Bendis and Geoff Johns and Jim Lee and, you know, names like that mean so much more because of the reach, and the stuff that they have written has been made into TV shows. The stuff that they have written have completely reshaped the entire universe that they write. We're going to get a little bit more into that with the Geoff Johns stuff a little bit later on. Todd and Joe have issues. But you can say the better part of the last 15 years at Marvel was more or less because of Bendis's design.
He's pretty much the backbone of Marvel for the last 17 years, where Geoff Johns has been the backbone of DC for like the last 17 years.
Right. And Bendis is always one of those guys that I always, whenever he has a new book or he's on a character that I'm interested in, I always give it a whirl. Because more times he's got more hits than misses. If you're looking at the long game, we're not looking this year, we're not looking the last 5 years, we're looking his entire career. If we're going that way, he's got one of the best batting averages, per se, of any writer around.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot sneeze at that.
No, you can't. And I even said, we always, and I think this may be more of what me and you argued about. I said the only thing that would make Batman sell more, like would be the biggest needle move, would be Brian Michael Bendis and Mike Diodato doing Batman. And we're halfway there, Joe.
Okay.
We're halfway there. When does Diodato's contract up? That's all I'm saying.
Oh, send him a tweet and ask him. That's not too personal of a question to ask someone.
How much do you make and when are you leaving? But
now, obviously, the big thing, as Todd has mentioned, and I'm sure that everyone has thought, Batman.
Right. Though, I will tell you how it's going. He's not getting Batman right out of the gate. Do you want me to tell you how it's going to happen, Joe?
Because I have a theory that I got from someone else, but go ahead.
I have a theory for myself. You want to go first? I stepped on you. You can go first if you want. What?
First.
I didn't get any of what you said.
You go first.
Okay. I'll go first. This is what's going to happen. He's going to come over. I don't know when exactly, like if it's, you know, tomorrow or in 4 months or whatever. He's going to come over. He's going to get a minor character, whether it's like people have joked that he said that years ago, he said Zatanna is the one he wants to do. So let's just say that one. It's going to be Zatanna. He's going to do a little Zatanna series, and then he's going to do Justice League and bring that character in to Justice League, because Justice League is a book right now that Brian Hitch is writing, but I could really say not a lot of people are talking about or care. So him having Bendis having the history with Avengers, give him the Justice League, make that book a marquee book now, and he'll be on it. You have the Zatanna tie-in. He can definitely do two books a month. We've seen that over at Marvel. As a matter of fact, with two books, he could probably do one bi-monthly, like the regular Rebirth books, and then one monthly book. So maybe Zatanna twice a month, and then Justice League once a month, or back and forth. It doesn't matter. So that'll go on for a while. Tom King said he has 100 issues of Batman that he wants to do. We're about 40-some issues into that. So in about a year and a half after the Doomsday stuff and the fallout from the Doomsday Watchmen stuff, the Doomsday Clock, he'll get a few issues after that. Then Tom King wants to do Superman. He's going to do Superman, which is going to leave Batman open. That's going to be Bendis' stuff, and that's where we're going to be in a little while. It's going to take some time, but that's how it's going to happen. Book it, Joe.
Okay. Working backwards from what you said, exactly. Tom King has a long-term plan, at least another 2 years on the main Batman book.
I say about a year and a half, but
okay. Well, again, about 2 years. You could very easily put Bendis on Detective.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to do that. I know you've talked about Zatanna. You've talked about what his schedule is. I think he's currently writing at Marvel 3 books.
But most of them are only monthly, so.
Right, most of them are monthly. But again, 3 books monthly could turn into 2 books with one being bi-monthly, you know?
Right, which is what I said, yep.
The other thing, we don't know when he starts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't know when his Marvel stuff ends. We don't know when this begins. We don't know when his first book is going to be, but I'm sure we'll know. I'm sure they're going to send up, you know, they're going to have the ticker tape parade down DC Boulevard. announcing whatever Bendis' first book is going to be. Now, again, I can certainly see him just being thrust right into Justice League, because I'll be honest with you, I don't even know who's writing Justice League these days. And you want to start off like gangbusters, you put Bendis on Justice League, and there you go. But that's not the book everyone wants. One of the people in the Marvel Puzzle Quest group that I'm in, Chloe, she suggested this. And I don't know why I didn't even think of this right off the bat. You've got Bendis. You want him on Batman. What's the next best thing to having someone like Bendis working on Batman?
Give him a limited series?
Gotham Central.
Oh.
You bring back a Gotham Central type book. He gets to play in the entire Batman sandbox, doing crime stuff, doing detective-y stuff. Without having the huge pressure, you build that book up. Because it doesn't matter what book he's doing. He does a Blue Devil book. That book is selling 100,000 issues in its first 6 months.
No. But,
you don't
okay.
think so?
Not 100,000. The character is a bit... He wasn't doing 100,000 on any book over at Marvel.
Okay.
With a lesser title. He wasn't doing 100,000 on Iron Man.
He hasn't been doing 100,000 on Iron Man. Things are a little bit different at Marvel right now than they were 2 years ago, than they were 5 years ago, and they're very different from the way things are at DC right now.
See, my thing is, I don't even know if Batman is doing 100,000.
We don't typically talk about sales, but if you want to.
I don't know. With Tom King, I don't know what Batman's selling. So that's what I'm saying. A Blue Devil book doing 100,000, I might question that. just my opinion. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay. So these are the numbers from August.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So. Now, okay. We're not going to count metal and the forge and the casting and everything else like that.
No, no, don't, because that's just a brief thing.
Non-tie-in, regular bi-weekly issues of Batman do 102.
Okay, so it does do 100,000.
Now, it's a steep decline after that. Everything else after that, it cuts in half.
That I figured.
And but then you were talking a huge glut of books that are doing 55 to 50 consistently.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking Detective Comics, we're talking Flash, we're talking Justice League, we're talking Superman, and then Wonder Woman dips down to 40, and so on and so forth. But, okay, so I'll take that back. Blue Devil is definitely going to do... It'll do... 100 for the first issue, and then it'll settle down to like a nice 65 to 70.
I think it'll do less than 100, but probably 50 to 60,000.
But even Harley Quinn, like Harley Quinn's numbers are like in the mid, like, or in the low 40s,
mm-hmm.
you know, dipping down into like 39-ish, and that's still considered a success. That's still in the top 50 of books sold.
Hey, a 20,000 for Blue Devil would be a success. So, like, we can't do it that way. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I just look at it as any book he's going to bring is cachet. The bigger the characters, the bigger the number. That's the way it works.
Right. And just to kind of give you an idea here, Marvel, their top books, even their Star Wars stuff that consistently sell,
mm-hmm.
Star Wars books that quote-unquote consistently sell are only in the mid to low 70s range on average.
Wow.
Like, they'll see a spike for, like, a crossover or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, 70 to 75 is what they sell on average, and that's considered successful.
Gotcha. So.
I still think a Gotham Central-type book is where it's at to start.
That would get more.
Maybe you do, like, a six-issue miniseries to get Justice League in there, but I definitely think, you know, everyone's like, oh, we want to see him on the crazy character. And of course, I think the reason I bring up Blue Devil is because I think I saw Jason Aaron say, you told me you had a Blue Devil pitch. Please do Blue Devil.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you're bringing someone like Bendis in, you don't putz around with lower second, third tier characters. You go right to the top.
Yeah, I agree. I just think... Here's the reason why it's hard to go to the top,
mm-hmm.
is because of the Doomsday Clock stuff. They are, because I don't know when they knew they were getting Brian Michael Bendis, but they literally have their stuff worked out for a year. Do you know what I mean? Like, because you have all the stuff going into Doomsday Clock. You have the 12 issues with Doomsday Clock, and then you know they have the Fallout plan. They aren't just going to throw Brian Michael Bendis in the middle of that. Because they just can't upheave the apple cart with all these things that they have prepared. So that's why I think he's going to do something that won't affect the main thrust of the stories. It gives him, like, to get his feet wet. The book's going to sell anyway, and then it's the long run after that. That's my take.
Gotham Central miniseries.
That's fine. That's a lesser book. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say that you don't, he's not going to get a lesser book. A Gotham Central, unless it's Batman, you know, the book is a Batman book. That's a lesser book, in my opinion. Do you know what I'm saying? Unless Batman's the main character.
Right.
But here's the thing everybody's forgetting in all of this, my heart is shattered that we're not getting a Brian Michael Bendis Fantastic Four book.
Well, you know, we haven't gotten to, you know, this. We don't, listen, Todd, this show doesn't deal in a rumor and innuendo.
Mm-hmm.
But there's rumor and innuendo going around that was part of the reason that he was, you know, for whatever reason, he couldn't do the Fantastic Four book.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was much, you know, whether it was an editorial decision, writing comics, whether it was higher up because of Disney and everything else like that. There was also discussion, there's also rumor and innuendo that all the recent discussion at Marvel about how diversity doesn't sell might have hit a little too close to home.
Okay.
And again, there's all rumor and innuendo, speculation, and so forth. But these very well could be the reasons that he's leaving. Who's to say he doesn't take over that the Terrifics book that Jeff Lemire's doing? Now, where does this put someone like Lemire, who was kind of sort of being groomed to be like their next big gun?
Well, that's funny because Lemire kind of left, or Lemire or whatever his name is, left Marvel because he, remember he had that like the Thanos book and then how, that was supposed to go on to a big cosmic event and now it's not going to, and he was on Old Man Logan and that was going somewhere, and he's over at DC now, and so I don't know. I just look at it as in, we're talking rumor and innuendo. It isn't rumor and innuendo knowing that he's definitely not going to get an FF book. And seeing what he was doing with Victor as the as the Iron Man going in, I wanted to see him stumble and become Reed show up and just it was coming. Reed coming to trip up Doom being a hero, he gets mad at him. Status quo back to where it's supposed to be, but and who's gonna get that book unless it's Jason Aaron? Who does Marvel have now that's gonna do a Fantastic Four book that's going to draw me other than the Fantastic Four name? Because think about that now. We're talking about how good it is for DC. What does Marvel have left? Dan Slott and Jason Aaron. And I'm sorry, but like Dan Slott needs to do something other than Spider-Man to get my notice.
He just wrapped up Silver Surfer.
And I don't remember, I didn't read that. So I know that's on me, but Dan Slott is a big creator, but it seems like he's been the Spider-Man guy. You got to move him up. Like, when, at least with Aaron, Aaron's done Thor. He's done Ghost Rider. He's done, I can't even think of all the books that he X-Men.
He did Wolverine. He did X-Men stuff.
Right. He's been around, where it just seems like Dan Slott, for the last, whatever, I'd like to see a little more of his style on other stuff. So, but Marvel's hurting right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big punch in the gut to Marvel.
It's a big loss.
Think we can get Bendis on the show to do an interview?
Yeah, I'm sure we can get him.
Get on the horn.
I know a guy who knows a guy, but that guy has already announced that he's already got something in the can that he's getting ready to release, talking about just this.
Okay.
So anyway, all this shakeup, Todd. There's conventions. The rest of the comic world goes on. There's a ton of conventions happening this weekend. And all the links to these will be in the show notes. The North Carolina Con in Bull City, Saratoga in Saratoga Springs, New York, Phoenix Fan Fest, Palm Springs Convention, Fantastic Con in Mount Pleasant, the Mighty Con in DuPage, Illinois, and Kansas City Con. Like I said, all the links are going to be in the show notes, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
But now, the biggie of the weekend, the hereto unknown Rhode Island Comic Con, happening in Providence, Rhode Island. To say that this is the greatest collection of media guests that I've ever seen in my entire life would be an understatement, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
So because of this, we're going to play a little game.
Okay.
The median for a photo op with the celebrities at this convention appears to be $50.
What does that mean?
To get a picture with these celebrities is $50.
Okay.
Like the average of all the celebrities that are going to be
gotcha.
There.
Gotcha.
Now, some of the celebrities do not have prices posted.
That means they're free.
Such as Richard Dreyfuss, Dolph Lundgren, George Wendt, Val Kilmer. Now, what Todd and I are going to do, we're going to go through this list, and I'm going to tell you the person, and Todd, you have to guess. Now, you're going to be shocked when I go through this list.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to guess, is the photo op with this person, photo op, more or less than $100?
More or less than $100?
More or less than $100.
No whammies.
$50 is the median.
Okay.
We're going to start with Norman Reedus, the dreamy Daryl from Walking Dead.
I'm going to go with over, Joe.
That's $110 for a picture with Daryl, yes.
Ooh.
Mark Ruffalo, co-star of the smash hit comedy Thor Ragnarok.
That is over 100.
160, yes, sir.
Boom.
Andy Serkis, digital effects man, and also the villain in the upcoming Black Panther film.
Who is it? Who's the name of his character? The master of sound, the murderous master of sound. He is under 100.
$90, you're correct.
Woo!
Sebastian Stan, the Winter Soldier.
He is over 100.
120. Paul Bettany, the Vision.
He is 120, over 100.
Right on the nose, 120. Weird Al Yankovic.
He is under 100.
Under 100 at 60.
Mm-hmm.
William Shatner.
The Shat is over 100.
Wrong, 80.
What happened?
Listen, I guess he's on everybody else's price and said, I gotta make some money this weekend.
Oh my God, that's a printing error. It's 180.
All right. Ian McDiarmid.
I don't know who that is.
He is the Emperor from Return of the Jedi.
He is under 100.
He is right at 100.
Oh, well, that you didn't tell me there was... I could push. Okay.
Then I'm going to skip this guy, too. Batista. Who was from the Guardians of the Galaxy films.
Oh, boy. Is he over 100?
$70.
That's a deal.
That's your... Well, we're not done with the list, but that's your deal of the weekend so far.
Who was the other 100 that you won't mention?
Pee-wee.
Pee-wee Herman?
Yes.
Oh, my God. That is... Oh. He was the Penguin's father.
Mm-hmm. He was also the bellhop in one of the Cheech and Chong movies.
Paging Mr. Herman. Mr. P.W. Herman.
John Cusack.
Oh, he's under.
$90, yeah. Carl Weathers.
He should be over 100, but he's under.
Another bargain at $65.
That's right. And he'll sign your soup bone, too, right, if you bring it.
Robert Englund, star of the Nightmare on Elm Street films.
Oh, and that episode of Married with Children. Mm-hmm. He is under 100.
Over at 105.
That's the bad one. That's too much.
Well, listen.
So, no, yes. That's, for someone who hasn't been in anything, Shatner's more iconic than
Listen, come on. But I think Shatner gets out too much.
He's oversaturation.
Mm-hmm. Ugh.
See what I did there?
I did. Tony Danza.
Oh. Hold me close, young Tony Danza.
Yeah.
He should be under 100.
He's $50.
And sounds about right.
Judge Reinhold.
Oh, my God. The only guy to be other than Eddie Murphy in all three Beverly Hills Cop movies. He's under 100.
$50 as well.
That's a deal, son.
Gene Simmons.
Oh, my God. Okay, that's a tough one because he kind of loves money, but he loves a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go with... Oh, God, Todd. Under 100.
120.
Oh, over 100. I messed
that's,
that one up.
That's Vision and Winter Soldier prices, just so you know.
That is.
And the last one, and we'll move on, Ted McGinley.
From Married with Children?
Yes. Jefferson Darcy.
Jefferson Darcy. He was on Happy Days. He was on Hope and Faith.
Love Boat. Right.
So many good shows. Right there, he should be over 100 for all of those.
Right.
But I'm going to go under 100.
You're correct. $50.
That is your mark photo if you're at one of these shows.
Right. You're either going, you want the best bang for your buck, you want the best story, you want to have the most fun. You either go Ted McGinley or Batista.
Yep. Now, Ted McGinley, if anything ever happens to one of us, that's who's replacing us on the podcast.
So before we get into everything else, to continue on the show. So Corolla has mentioned on the show, it's been a while since it's come up, but I forget what prompted him. So they stopped making The Sopranos because Gandolfini wanted more money or didn't want to do it anymore or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
So he would always say on the radio show and on the podcast that they should have just did the next season, replaced Tony Soprano with Ted McGinley, and acted like nothing changed. Tony, you're letting yourself go a little bit there, and like, oh, blah, 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 blah. And it's just Ted McGinley is now Tony Soprano, moving on.
I would watch that show.
I've never seen an episode of The Sopranos in my life, but if you re-stunt casted the lead of the show as Ted McGinley, I'm there.
Oh, Dick York, Dick Sargent.
Now, what's the bigger... I know you said Robert Englund is the biggest ripoff of the list.
Yes.
I say Ian McDiarmid, the guy who's the emperor at $100. Get out of here with that.
All right, that is the biggest ripoff.
Mm-hmm.
That is the biggest ripoff. But Englund is not worth $100.
All right. Well, to me... You know what? To me, he is. If he was in full Freddy makeup...
That's what I always said. We always said, like, when John Wesley Shipp goes to the shows, he should have the helmet.
Right.
And I would pay whatever, yeah, here's my, shut up and take my money. And I think they really should. Like, I know that the actors would hate it and they'd feel like they were cattle, but you should have the costume on. That's what you, if you're in a movie or you have an iconic thing, you have to wear that for photo op.
Or at least give me the glove, like he's wearing the Freddy glove or something.
Oh, something.
Something.
Like the helmet on John Wesley Shipp and Doctor Who's have to hold the sonic screwdriver, stuff like that.
They all have to wear the same scarf. They have a community scarf that they all have to wear.
Yes. Oh, Eric Roberts, that's what you need the picture with.
No, Eric, but I was surprised to see, like, this is a crazy list of people on this list.
Mm-hmm. And Ted McGinley.
And Ted McGinley. One thing that's not a ripoff, though, is the soon-to-be-named network at soon-to-be-named-network.com or soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com, where you could find out information about this and all the other shows anytime these shows drop. This, of course, as well as Longbox Heroes After Dark, Fresher in Parlance, Profane Arguments, Puzzle Warriors 3, Aim Downsight Podcast, a gaming show, just had an episode drop earlier this week. I understand Paladins of Voltron is coming back any day now. Talking Gimmicks keeps getting teased that they're coming back, but I think they're just messing around. And of course, Podvocacy. I do want to give kudos. So far, we're only a couple days into the month, but apparently, Todd, November is official podcasting month.
Mm-hmm.
And Jason of Podvocacy is making it his mission to release a podcast a day, or at least be featured on a podcast a day. Of course, he has his own Podvocacy. He appears on a bunch of other shows that have to do with Transformers, both the actual, like, the depth and breadth of all of Transformers, and then another specialized show called Just Take My Money, about all the pre-orders and the toys and everything like that. And then, of course, Paladins of Voltron that he's going to be doing, that they kind of, like, bulk record a bunch of those. But to fill in the gaps of those, he's doing a bunch of one mic podcasts called the Kirk Cast, where it's just him rambling for a couple minutes just so they can hit that goal of doing a podcast a day for every day in the month of November. Me personally, I would have chosen February as my month because it's the shortest month, but again, I have to give Jason kudos for taking that upon himself, to better himself as a podcaster.
My goal is to do less podcasts a month.
Right.
But I don't see that happening.
Is this when we tell everyone Gallifrey Birds is canceled?
I'm sure, why not?
Just kidding. Joke's on you, everyone.
Joke's on Joe. He has to watch two more.
Oh, that might change. Well, never mind.
What?
No, it'll never change. I'll be watching Doctor Who until I'm dead, the end of the year.
That's right. As he's swinging from a rafter with the DB on repeat.
Hoisted by my own scarf.
Like, my favorite line from Drew Carey is when Joe Walsh appeared. He was on an episode, and he was just like the drugged out drunk guy, and he shocking, you know.
Joe Walsh. I
know that seems
really
like a stretch.
His acting chops there, huh?
That's right. And he walks into Drew's office, or Drew's, like, where he works with the two other guys. And he's like, oh, wow, Drew, this is where you work? Yeah, man. My old man worked in a place like this. hung himself from something just like that. My favorite moment.
But again, kudos to Jason, and anytime that he does a podcast or appears in a podcast or one of us appear in another podcast, it'll be up on soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com. Also in the show notes, in addition to all the conventions that we mentioned before, is all the links to the digital sales and freebies. There were no freebies changes in the last week, but all those are still there. There are a ton of sales going on. Marvel is having a sale on pretty much every Star Wars thing that they've ever put out. As well as a ton of Thor stuff. That Thor one's been going on for a while for some reason. And I know we've mentioned it before, and the link is always there in the show notes. Just kind of like a catch-all to whatever Amazon is doing with their weird and wacky sales if you're a Prime member. There's a bunch of Simons and Thor stuff that's available if you're a Prime member for free.
Oh, cool.
Which is crazy. IDW is having a sale that's called their Binge Sale, which I think just appears to be all trade paperbacks of pretty much everything that they do. A lot of their licensed stuff, Judge Dredd, Gem, Ghostbusters, X-Files, just kind of perusing the list real quickly there. Dynamite is having a sale on the, Garth Ennis book, The Boys. DC is having a sale that's called Justice League Part 1. And it's a lot of collections of more recent books of your Justice League characters that are going to be in the upcoming movie. Mm-hmm. And again, of course, it's like New 52 and newer. There's also single issue stuff in there. Comixology just recently changed the way they do their sales. And again, as we always like to tell you, whenever they're doing sales on Rebirth stuff, be sure to check that out. And the sales are going a little bit deeper, where in the past they would only do like the first like six issues of a Rebirth book, but it looks like they're doing like the first 12 to 15, depending on the title of a Rebirth book. Like the first like 14 issues of Batman, the first 12 issues of Wonder Woman are all on sale. Just as an example, at 99 cents a pop. So if you've been waiting on some of those, of course, check those out. And then Dark Horse is having a sale on what they call their Out of This World stuff, which is both licensed stuff, like Rick and Morty, American Gods, but also Black Hammer, which is a great, great book. I highly recommend Black Hammer. We'd mentioned Jeff Lemire before. That's one of his strongest ongoing books that he has. So that is all on sale. So, Todd, I've talked for a very long time. I'm winded. Whew. Where's my Spectrox? I'm going to let you take point on what we read last week here.
All right. Do you mind if I start with Captain America 695?
Well, you had tweeted something about this, where if there was a book that you could just talk about the entire show, little did you know the bombshell tonight that we would have, that would take up the entirety of the show.
Right. So basically, this is the new legacy issue of Captain America, mm-hmm. which basically starts out by Mark Waid and Chris Samnee on art. Basically starts out with a quick retelling a page of Captain America's origin, and then we jump forward to a early adventure of his right after he's unfrozen by the dialogue we can tell. Now, I'm not sure like when it would have been, because we have that constant sliding scale of time when it is, but he's in this little town, and he's stopping these terrorists from attacking the town. And right off the bat, in one page, Mark Waid makes me like feel great and give me goosebumps about Captain America. I don't like spoiling stuff much, but he's helping two little kids, and he tells the one kid, "You have to protect Jacob." And the little girl's like, "Why do I have to do it?" And he's like, "Because he's smaller than you." And then later, like in the beginning of that comes back when the girl tries to protect him, and he jumps in the way, and she's like, "Donna, sweetheart, I'm stronger than you. I protect you. That's the rule." And you're like, done and done. Captain America is back. I don't even need to know about Hydra Cap. I don't need anything. Steve Rogers, and I'm going to use this, my Cap is back. Now jump forward to to like the now time of Marvel Universe, and it's Cap or Steve Rogers back in this town again, which we find out is Burlington, Nebraska, and they're having their annual Captain America celebration, and he's wandering around listening to people discuss their like their meeting Cap and seeing what's going on, and then those terrorists show up again. And Cap's like, well, I knew all along. I'm not really here for the show. I'm here because I knew you were going to attack. And Cap does his thing. And I mean, it's not much of like in legendary stories, but how Mark Waid gets what I want from Captain America and gives it to me is fantastic. Like one issue, I don't say this often, all in. You have me for the next two. You could stumble for 4 months straight. You have me for the next year and a half, 2 years on this book, just from the first issue of this comic. That's how good it was.
And it was beautiful in its simplicity.
Yes.
I guess would be the best way to talk about it. Do they really delve into a lot of the stuff that's been going on in Secret Empire and all the Cap as a Nazi and all this other stuff? They touch on it just enough that you know that it happened. And the main thing about this book, they don't dwell on it. They don't linger on it. They don't run into situations where Cap is going to towns where people are booing Cap and throwing like bottles and tomatoes at him, sort of thing. You know, Waid does a great job of putting Cap into a situation where he had been years prior, in, as Todd had mentioned, the sliding time scale of, like, he shows up in this Nebraska town almost after he, you know, comes out of the ice, and now here he is X amount of years later, and, like, isn't there a thing where they, like, change the name of the town to Captain America, Nebraska?
Something like that, yes.
Right, and it's, like, 10 years to the day since the last time that he was there, and there's, like, the little subtle nods to, like, here's the little girl that he saved, kind of all grown up, and there's, you know, just... And they don't beat you over the head with it. She's just there. Of course she's there. You know, she's still around. And then there's the people talking about how Cap inspired them. And there's even the guy that talks about and how this one guy believes that it really wasn't Cap who did all those things. That it was somebody else. But Cap took care of him because that's what Cap does.
Right. He's a... And Cap wasn't frozen in the ice. How could we believe that? He's a truther about Captain America. Which is fantastic.
Right, which was a nice little fun touch. And this is a book that has been so steeped in what our political climate is in the United States for the better part of the last year. Cap has been so steeped in that book for well over that time frame. And Mark Waid is admittedly and unabashedly a very political guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he did not use this book as his venue to hammer home whatever his political beliefs may or may not be.
And here's the thing. You know how people say you can't, don't get political in comics? I don't mind it. I don't mind it occasionally. I don't mind it in certain books especially. But you know what? Like, and I'm not going to mention any previous Captain American writers' names because I don't want to just slam them for... But
Dan Juergens.
Do it well. You better do it. You better do it well. And you better, like, not bore me when you do it. And that was the problem I had with the politics in the last book. It was just so hitting you over the head with a hammer. Where there are little, like, little jokes in here. It's like about punching a Nazi. And it's like, it's almost funny because I get it because that's what's going on in the culture. But like you said, he doesn't beat you over the head with it. And if he's going to say something, I don't mind if it's quick and done and then give me my Cap fighting, you know, villains. I don't need it all the time and every line out of someone's mouth, and I can't see the art through the word balloons. And that's not what we get here. And I'm 100% fine with that. And I literally got goosebumps reading this book at times because I'm like it. And then the best part is at the end, and I think I might be writing into this. I don't often do that stuff where they have a whole section where it's called Cap Corner, and it's what does Captain America mean to you, and they want to know. I may very well write to them what Captain America means to Todd Roker.
And make sure that you, and if you do, make sure you include in there okay to print.
I always include okay to print. Except for the texts I send you.
Don't worry, I screen capped them all and I'm collecting them in a separate fanzine.
Oh.
You and two other people.
Am I the same two people?
I don't know.
Socko accounts?
Oh, well. But yes, again, I don't want to gush too much about this. And was this the book that you said we could have just devoted a whole episode to?
Yes, it was. I could have went page by page on this book and talked about it for the whole show.
Mark Waid's Captain America is my Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
I've read Cap here and there in other books. He's popped up in other books that I've read. But it was his run pre-Heroes Reborn.
Mm-hmm.
The Man Without a Country stuff that he did. And I know that casts a wide net, because I think that's been a title of at least 75 Captain America stories.
I think it was those 75 and then Jack Kirby's The Mad Bomb. That's all the names of, like, Cap stories.
But it was Mark Waid and Ron Garney on that run that they had for maybe about, like, 8 issues. And it was one of those times where I really got to know who Mark Waid was as a writer at a very impressionable age. And it was the first time that I could see that Captain America would be a cool character. Now, I know a lot of people probably read a lot of the stuff from the 80s, a lot of the Mark Grunwald stuff, and unfortunately that was a little bit before my time, and I'm sure a lot of that stuff does hold up very well, but the one thing, and I said it before and I'll say it again, Mark Waid, an admittedly very politicized writer, could have used this as his sounding board to extol whatever political beliefs he has, but he chose not to.
That's right, He saves that for Archie.
He saves that for Archie and his Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
So if you did not pick up Captain America 695, it gets the highest recommendation from both of us of any book, at least until December 20th.
That's right. This officially gets the Todd nod, Joe.
Well, this is the first time a book's gotten the illustrious Todd nod in quite some time.
That's right. Captain America 695 gets the Todd nod.
Mm-hmm. Remember when we had discussed about 17 years ago, at least in our sliding scale of podcast time,
yes,
that we were going to try to figure out a way that we can contact these publishers to get our blurbs on their books or on their trades or in previews or something?
Yes, I remember that.
And then that kind of slipped away.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was recently inspired by our steak and steak dinner that we had a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was flipping through previews the other day, and I start seeing a lot of those quotes and stuff popping up.
Right.
And the fire, I'm not going to say it's a full burn just yet,
mm-hmm.
but someone just flicked the match.
Oh.
That's all.
A spark has been lit. With me with the Todd nod, did that do it?
That reminded me to mention it to you.
Next, you're going to be trying to get stuff from comic companies for giveaways.
Did I mention December 20th before? Again?
I think you did. I think you did. Is that the date Kane goes nuts? Is that the date?
No, that's March 9th or May 19th.
Okay.
So, second book that we're going to be talking about is another Mark Waid book of a different variety. This is Archie number 25 with art by Audrey Mock. The continuation of the fallout from the car accident, from the drag race that Archie and Reggie had. It's a lot of the same tropes that we've seen before, that we've seen during the 25 issues that Mark Waid has been doing of this book, but the main crux of this book is what a good friend Jughead is to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So he does his Jughead things to circumvent Betty's parents so that Archie and Betty can have a meetup.
Right.
And that is the main crux of the story. There's a lot of other little things going in there. Reggie ends up in a holding cell with the Blossom Twins' real father, which I'm sure will come back. Of course, there's stuff with Veronica and her father. But again, this was a great Jughead issue. And Mark Waid had taken over the Jughead book with like the last 2 issues. Before it kind of, it wasn't officially canceled, it just kind of disappeared from solicitations. And the 2 issues that he did was kind of like a more of a Sabrina-y thing. But based on the strength of this, I wish Mark Waid got to do more on the Jughead solo book and got to do more stuff like this.
Right. I'm with you. I mean, what we've said about this book over and over. My thing in this is where, you know, Jughead has a dog, and we get the story of how, you know, Betty and Jughead get closer back when something, you know, tragic kind of happens to his dog, Hot Dog, for a little bit. I love. And there's one thing in this where Jughead does, a lot of stuff to get ready to talk to Betty's parents. And the bit where he does, like, just do what I say, and then technically he doesn't have to lie later, is one of my favorite things. It's like, oh, just drop your phone in the grass. All right. You know, and he does it, and he goes over and he tells the parents, like, this, this, and this. And none of it's a lie because of, you know, interest from a certain point of view, if you know what I mean. So I'm with you. I love this book. Archie's been so good. You know, it makes me love it. And all I got to say is people should watch Riverdale. That's all I'm going to say.
Save that for TV talk, you.
What? What did I do?
So anyway, that's what we've read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to Todd and LongboxHeroes.com. Oof.
Easy, Heroes, son.
What was that?
Easy, son.
All right. LongboxHeroes.com every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern Standard Time or so, sometimes earlier like it was this week. We put up the pull post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them sent to your home, however it is that you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out so that you are prepared for the books that are coming out this week and you have enough bags and backs to bring all of your books home safely. Mm-hmm. Two of the things that Todd and I do over the course of 2017 is, one, keeping a running tab of all the books that we have purchased. I'm about to lap Todd at the 100 over mark. Not that it was a race. It was just a listing of things. I think when we do dollars spent next year, it'll be a different tale. We're also attempting to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week, where Todd still has a one correct guess over me. Looking at your list, I'm going to guess. Well, I'm going to question something.
Right, right.
You do not have Batman Lost on your list?
I do not know what that is.
Batman Lost is the, if I'm not mistaken, hang on, bingity bing bing bing.
You know, I should get a notebook for this.
It is the Scott Snyder penned art by Oliver Coppiel. Story of what's going on with our actual Bruce Wayne Batman during all of Metal.
Okay, add that to my list.
Okay. So since you were not aware that that book was even coming out, I'm going to guess that Mr. Miracle number 4 was the book you were most looking forward to coming out.
It was not the book I'm looking forward to.
Oh, man!
Do you know what the book I'm looking forward to most coming out is?
Rock Candy Mountain 5?
Yes, I love that book so much.
That was my second choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm looking over your books.
Mm-hmm.
And is the book you're looking forward to most Batman Lost number 1?
It is.
Oh, you shouldn't have mentioned it. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I don't want you missing books that are crucial key issues to a storyline that you're reading.
Joe, I thought about getting a notebook and trying something for January. That's all I'm saying. But I need you to explain.
Two notebooks.
Two notebooks?
Yes.
One for mashing down. But I need guidance. I want to be your Padawan to figure out how to do a notebook and give up in February.
The Kohai to my Senpai? Is that what they say?
I think that's what they say.
Right.
But
you'll get there eventually, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
Some of what I do will eventually rub off on you.
Now, do I need one of those, like, black and white notebooks? You know, one of the cover, I mean? That's what you have, right?
I will tell you this. The secret reason that I have one of those is twofold. One,
because stickers go better on the cover.
Well, stickers go great on everything because stickers are the best.
Right.
One is if you get, like, a spiral ring notebook.
Right.
Those pull when you take them in and out of bags.
Oh.
And you will ruin not only your bag, but also your notebook.
That's a double whammy.
Right. And then two, when you have one of those bound composition books, and you're ever in a situation where someone asks you for a piece of paper,
You can't say,
no, I can't take it out of this.
Because then the other side falls out.
Exactly.
You're a shrewd one, Mr. Sposto.
I'm trying to figure out life, man. One notebook at a time.
That's right. Well, I'm going to get a notebook. I'm going to get one of those, whatever they're called, notebooks. And I'm going to put pins all over the cover. And I'm going to do my monthly issues.
Remember when I used to do... I know I used to do DJ's pull list weekly. And then I think I used to do yours.
No, you never did mine. You would send me, and you stopped. You'd be like, all right, here's the whatever for DC.
Oh, when the solicitations would come out.
Right, but you never actually told me what to get and what to keep and what to get rid of and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Though that could be interesting. Mm-hmm. We'll have to discuss that tomorrow.
I need more work for myself.
Not more work, just discuss. I need to get a few pointers.
You write that down.
I'm writing down pointers.
That'll be an episode of After Dark for the people that don't like wrestling heavy After Darks. Hint, you mean this week's is a wrestling heavy After Dark.
You mean everyone then?
Yes. It's how Todd broke into the business, folks.
Oh, shake, shake, shake. Shake, shake, shake.
Oh. So while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out all the stuff that we've ever done in the history of the internet. It exists over at Longbox Heroes. Maybe I should put a link in there to the SoundCloud of the other show that's still out there. Nah, they don't need the traffic.
What? We need the traffic.
We need the traffic. We need people downloading shows that we no longer have access to that are over 3 years old of highly outdated material.
Or sponsors. I take sponsors.
Well, in lieu of sponsors, Todd, you could purchase a shirt or a sticker through us, through a little store button on the front page of longboxheroes.com, or you can click on our Amazon banner and purchase to your heart's content. As I understand, the holiday season is upon us, Todd, and people need stuff for things. And the stuff for things that I had to delete out of the script that we have for the show every week is someone went cat crazy through our Amazon link. And I think I have a feeling of who that was. When he listens to this and he contacts me, I will thank him then. But someone purchased Meow Mix Tender Centers Dry Cat Food.
Delicious.
They also purchased a pet hair remover glove.
Oh.
They also purchased a Pet Mate Ultimate Litter Scoop.
Mmm, tasty.
I've got a tip for all you animal lovers out there of how to get rid of pesky pet hair.
Don't have a pet?
Get rid of the pet it's attached to.
Oh my god.
I'm a monster.
You are a monster.
So, Todd, we have a story about your art attack?
Yes, we do. It is a David Messina Batman, which he was sitting
Logan's
at the table.
Partner?
Yes, yes. He was sitting at the table with... Emanuela Lupacino, who was last week's story, who I helped with her suitcase down the steps. And he was there. And what I found out was that they were from the same part of Italy. So they come together when they'll do the DC booths together and try to get their tables so they can talk to each other. Because they both speak Italian. That's their first language. They speak English, but Italian is their first language. And I was joking around, and Josh was busting me that they were burying me in Italian. And they kind of were when I found out, because I was like, oh, can I get, you know, he's like, who would you like? And I was like, okay, David Messina, I really don't know him. But it's once again like a thing. You're at the table getting Emanuela Lupacino. So you don't want to just like, hey, David Messina, I'm not really sure of your work. I'm just going to walk away and not get anything. So I'm like, you did Wonder Woman. He's like, yeah. I said, well, I just got a Wonder Woman off of Emanuela. I said, could I get a Ares? And he looked at me and I'm like, okay, let's try this again. And I was like, do whatever you want. And he was like, you know, just that confusion look. And I'm like, not even going to try. I was like, dealer's choice. Draw what you want. And he drew me the Batman. And as he's drawing me the Batman, they start John in Italian. And Josh just goes, they're burying you. And I'm like, what? And he's like, oh, they're just talking. I could tell they're talking. And he's joking. And I'm like, oh. And they heard us talk and they look at us and they're like, oh, we talk, you know, we talk in Italian sometimes. He's like, we were just saying, like, in Europe, it's different when we do sketches. People don't bang into the table like you're doing right now.
Which is me.
Because I was putting my hand and leaning on the table and shake it while you're drawing. I'm like, and Josh goes, see, I told you they were burying you. I was like, I'm going to be good now.
Oh, very astute of Josh there to pick up when people are burying you right to your face.
Yeah, I'm oblivious. And I was just like, I'll just shut up now.
Oh, my goodness. So another great Todd's Art Attack story. And, hey, if you were going to a convention or if you've been to a convention recently and gotten a commission or purchased a page or you yourself are an aspiring artist and you want to share your art with the world, just tweet at us and include the @ on Twitter of Todd's Art Attack and we'll retweet it and share it with the rest of the world.
And I had somebody who was showing me all his Derek Robertson and art from Transmetropolitan and say, hey, like, if you ever need help, try to figure out how to get something off him, I can help you. I'm like, I may have to, you know, I may have to put this in triplicates off on the side so I remember.
Well, I think his Twitter is Mr. Dystopia.
Yes. But yes. I was like, yeah, trying to help me get my dream sketches. That's pretty cool.
That's right. This is what this podcast does. It connects like-minded individuals with not only podcasting things, but other interests as well.
We connect, not divide.
Right. So, let's get into Todd and Joe Have Issues, where sure. This week we're going to be discussing the Flash Iron Heights one-shot. Now, in my little write-up, I have to make a little correction here. I figured it would be done here. That I said that this issue was kind of the kickoff of Geoff Johns writing the book, which was incorrect.
No, it wasn't.
He had been writing the book for about a year at that point.
Maybe longer.
Right, because I know there was the Beanstalk storyline, there was the Mirror Universe storyline.
Yep.
There was the Weather Wizard storyline, which leads into this.
And wasn't there the Cieta storyline?
Yes, and Cieta as well, yes. So this was kind of like the beginning of the new year of his storyline, kind of tying together those previous storylines into what's coming forward.
Right. And introducing new villains that would be part of the story from here on out.
Right. But again, not only introducing new, but also reintroducing the ones that he had just done, because he had created a ton of new villains. Girder, just to name a few, you know, we mentioned.
That was his first appearance.
Oh, this was Girder's first appearance?
According to what I looked up last night, Girder's first appearance is Iron Heights number one.
Oh, that's right, because the Girder story, like the Girder solo story comes a little bit later. Yes, yes, yes.
Right, it's Murmur, Girder, and I'm trying to think who the third villain was that was brand new in all this.
Double Down? No.
Double Down, yes.
Okay.
Which he never really got around to Double Down, which breaks my heart. But anyway.
So, we get flashback stuff of how Murmur, new serial killer type rogue villain, ties into Barry's time as a forensic scientist. How he Murmur was a doctor who went crazy because he couldn't stop hearing the voices. He ends up getting locked up. There's something that he puts in the water supply that ends up attempting to kill everyone who's at Iron Heights, and it's about to spread through all of Central City. So Jay Garrick, the Golden Age Flash, stays back at the lab to start trying to whip up some sort of antidote, some sort of cure for this, while Wally West Flash takes Pied Piper, former rogue, now Flash's best friend, into the heart of the beast, Iron Heights Penitentiary, to try to not only save some of the worst and most horrible Flash villains of all, but also try to save themselves from dying from this horrible virus.
And I'm pretty sure Pied Piper was a good guy before this.
Though. No, I'm just saying.
Okay.
He was a good guy way before this. He was one of the few rogues that reformed and stayed reformed.
Right.
But there's a bunch of stuff in here that builds up all the mysteries of all these characters, where they're going to be going. There's something going on that Piper has been kind of missing, and he won't tell Barry, or I keep wanting to say Barry because of the TV show, won't tell Wally what he's been up to. We later find out that it's, you know, something crazy with his parents. But all these characters, it all leads up to the formation of a brand new rogues gallery with a couple, two, actually, of the old rogues involved. And when old rogues get involved with new rogues, there's only one man who comes stomping around. He's not in this issue, but he doesn't take too kindly to a bunch of upstarts taking the name of the crew that he built up, gang-affiliated MDK, and that's Captain Cold. But we'll get to that another day.
Right. And also, this is the first appearance of the warden, Dominic Wolfe, who
yes.
has a grudge against criminals. He just hates them. And it's how Ironhide has changed.
Metas in general.
Right, especially rogues, though, and what they're gotten. He doesn't believe in reform. He believes in incarceration, which is interesting. Wolf is a great character who we'll get to appeared on the new season of Flash and everything. But I really enjoyed this book. I was a big fan. Murmur is a great character. He's almost like he could have been the Flash's Joker. Because he's crazy, he, you know, cut out his own tongue so he wouldn't incriminate himself again, sewed up his mouth. Like I remember reading this comic and going, like, Murmur is, you know, bat guano crazy. Like, just fantastic, especially for a Flash villain whose most Flash villains up to this point were just, you know, criminals with a gimmick, with a weapon or whatever you want to call it, the rogues. Sieta was maybe the first, he was a cult member who had all that, and I really enjoyed that storyline. But Murmur, like, straight on just crazy, the first villain. And it makes me go back and realize how much Wally was, as we talked earlier in the show, with Mark Waid being, you know, my Captain America, how much Wally was my Flash. Like, even though I read a little bit of Barry beforehand, like, the iconic Flash to me will always be Mark Waid / Geoff Johns. And this is the heart of, like, his great stuff. And even with him questioning his secret identity that's out, which later Geoff Johns would, like, really delve into and do things with. Like you said, he set down a lot of the future work in this issue. And Ethan Van Sciver, man. This was, I think, the first I ever heard of him at that time. And I remember him being at a show and having pages super cheap of this book, and I didn't buy any, and I'm an idiot for it.
That's like that's like my Walking Dead thing with Brian, a.k.a. Studebaker.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, maybe Walking Dead was out for maybe 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
At that point, the comic, that is, and
right.
We were at one of the local Philly cons, and some stand was selling an issue of Walking Dead number one for $100.
Oh,
and we're like,
God.
Oh boy, that's a little too pricey for one issue of a comic book.
I like Highway
this
Walking
Robbery. Dead, and they'll probably do okay, but $100, you know, even it goes to $200 in a couple years, you know, still, I don't know, $100, that's a lot, you know?
Right. But I get my win. I get my win from the one Preacher page I bought a while back.
There you go. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Until the bubble bursts there.
It won't.
No comment.
So.
Moving along. Was there anything else we have to say about Flash Iron Heights other than it's awesome?
No, that it's, how about it's really awesome?
It's really awesome, yes. Oh, and I can't remember her name, but who did they set up as the leader of the new rogues? It's another new-ish character that they introduced.
Blacksmith?
Was that?
Blacksmith?
Yes, Blacksmith. So they introduce her, but they have her, like, in shadow in the last page, like you can't see her face or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, what her origin is and how she ties into the rogues and everything is such a cool thing that you never would have expected to come later on in the book.
And Magenta, Wally's old girlfriend, was there.
Yep.
So, Geoff Johns knew what he was doing.
Yes, yes, indeed.
He's almost like the Brian Michael Bendis of DC.
Almost.
Almost.
And, you know, we talked about it before. How it was him taking over JSA led to him taking over this book, and then this led to him bringing back Hal Jordan, and then that ended up bringing back, like, he has, like, three legitimate, like, super hits under his belt that aren't Batman.
Right. And Booster Gold.
And, well, Booster Gold would come. Would Booster Gold come after Green Lantern?
It would come, yes, I believe it would definitely after Green Lantern. And Booster Gold, in my honest opinion, is probably the last great thing Geoff Johns has done. Like, truly great. I'm not saying the other stuff is bad. Well, Flashpoint. I'm not a big fan of Flashpoint. But, as a matter of fact, I was just discussing that with somebody today that I actually think Flashpoint is kind of blech. But, otherwise, like, I think the last truly thing that I loved from Geoff Johns was Booster Gold.
I'm gonna have to go look. I'm gonna have to go back and look to see the timeline of when his stuff came out. Let's look right now, since the show's not gonna be long enough already.
Sure, why not? Might even be longer at the rate I'm going.
Okay. Here we go. Because he has a couple Marvel things in there. And I really liked his...
Avengers?
His little run on Avengers had some good stuff in there. And yeah, it was about it.
His Thing miniseries called Freak Show was fantastic. With Scott Collins, which I think was where their working thing started.
Mm-hmm.
And then
No. Because That was 2002, and I think Scott Collins was already doing Here and There on Flash.
Okay, maybe.
Yeah, because it was one of those deals where it's like the team of Flash coming over, right?
Right.
Okay. So this bibliography don't go so good. I like Blackest Night.
Wasn't that after... Well, that was before... Was that before... No, that was around Booster Gold. Right, yes, because he had left Booster Gold by that time.
Mm-hmm.
So Blackest Night probably was his... His last great thing.
Right, because Booster Gold was 2008, which I forgot that it was that late. And then Blackest Night came after that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. His Aquaman?
Okay, I like that, but I didn't love it as much as I love Booster Gold.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say this without being – trying not to be a jerk. I think he got a lot of credit for stuff that everybody thought was cool that was Peter David who did before him. So
okay.
So that's kind of why I'm like, yeah, he gets a lot of credit. That's a great series. But I'm like, seen it before.
I think Blackest Night was good. Probably doesn't stand the test of time. But I don't think Booster Gold stands the test on time either. But they're both good stories.
Mm-hmm.
So I know normally it's Todd's week to pick as we alternate back and forth, but sometimes there's extraneous circumstances for the next Todd and Joe Have Issues, and Todd relinquished this one to me. And sometimes it happens where a little bit larger of a book, a little bit longer of a book gets picked, and this is more a graphic novel, kind of maybe over that 64-page mark. But in honor of the Brian Michael Bendis news happening, our Todd and Joe Have Issues for next week is going to be Bendis's Fortune and Glory book. I think it was originally from Oni Press, then it got republished by Image, and has been republished and published many, many times. It's essentially Bendis as both writer and artist of his adventures of trying to get his crime book, Torso, sold in Hollywood as a movie.
People forget Brian Michael Bendis was an artist.
Yes. He actually started as, I guess it was, he was a cartoonist in his local newspaper.
Good for him.
Yes. And whether it was like funny pages or like political cartoons or whatever it was, but that's how he originally started off.
I'm usually in the local papers, but it's the headlines.
That's right. Missed connections. Do they still do that in the paper?
That's more of a Craigslist thing now. Oh, okay.
They don't let me on Craigslist no more.
Oh, boy.
There was some unpleasantness.
That couch was filled with Spectrox.
A little more. Listen, Craigslist's definition of soiled is a little bit different than my definition of soiled, okay? Gently used. That one cushion was the only one that was gently used, but the rest, you're on your own. Anyway. Before we get into TV talk, we are going to get into movie talk, unless there's something I missed, which does happen.
No, we did The Fortune and Glory. We're ready to move on.
All right. So, movie talk, as we are going to discuss spoilery, heavy, filled stuff about Thor Ragnarok. I'm not sure how much that we can get into it. That's not already out there because the movie has been released overseas for the last 2 weeks and now made like $121 million over the last weekend. So I'm almost certain that everyone saw it. So I feel very confident in talking very freely and openly about it. But the one thing that I do want to say, we went to our local low-end theater that's around here that has the $6 matinees.
Right.
And for the first time, to appease my child, we did the D-box seating, where it's like you immerse yourself into the film and the seat like moves around and shakes with the movie and stuff.
Oh, my goodness.
And the little commercial before it says, words to the effect of, you barely notice the, you know, without a distraction, right? This thing is the ultimate distraction. I wouldn't, if my kid wasn't holding on, it probably would have tossed him out of the chair at least twice.
It's like a bull from a bar, one of those Bronco bulls.
The mechanical bull we have to stay on for like 8 seconds, right?
Yes, you have to stay on for the whole Ragnarok.
Now, later in the film, when like during the slower parts and there was still some vibro action, it did gently rock him to sleep for a period of the film. But then once the action sequences started, jolted him right back up into the film.
He was like, wah!
So this movie stars Thor, who is a real-life person, his stepbrother Loki, also a real-life person.
Stepbrother Loki.
What?
Half-brother. I just like to see them.
Half-brother.
I would just like to see. And actually, he's adopted brother.
Oh, okay.
So, but go ahead.
So they go on a wacky adventure that takes them to the Junkticon world from the first Transformers animated cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
Where they meet the Fly and the Hulk.
Right.
Then they have to figure out how to get back to Asgard, which the Fly makes fun of. The name of Thor's land. They get Valkyrie to come along with them. And then a bunch of other people who wanted to revolt anyway against the Junkticon's planet. Not to be confused with the Junkticons from last season of Walking Dead. Hela, who is also their sister in some way that I think only is in the movies.
Yes, because in the comic, I think she is related to Odin, but like part of that whole like family of gods. She might be Odin's sister in the comics. I'm not really sure how it all works.
So then they go back to Asgard, and then our heroes allow Asgard to be destroyed because, Todd, I'm not sure if you heard this, Asgard is not a place, it's a people.
Hey, as long as they survive, Asgard survives.
Right. And also the director, Taika Waititi, is the voice of a rock monster who's not the Thing.
Right, who was in Planet Hulk, though.
That's correct.
Right.
So that's me giving my jokey Cliff Notes version of the movie. What did you think of the movie, Todd? Did you enjoy yourself with the film?
I enjoyed parts of it, and I disliked parts of it.
Well, let's get into the parts that you disliked.
The comedy, I'm all for fun superhero movies, but time and a place, and it takes me out of the movie so hard. Like, and I get it early on. Like, I'm not even talking about Hulk, Thor, fun stuff. That's great, but first of all, I couldn't stand Jeff Goldblum as the Grandmaster.
Oh, okay.
Just terrible. Just terrible. He's worse than Ned from Spider-Man. Which, did you see Spider-Man? You saw Spider-Man, right? Homecoming?
Like the new Spider-Man. Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yes, because I forget your whole stance on Spider-Man movies. I get confused. But, so I think that they should have a Ned Grandmaster team up in a movie I never need to watch. And, like, spoiler alert, they destroy Asgard at the end. And, like, it's a great scene where Surtur destroys Asgard and he drives the sword through Asgard. And there's all the people that have survived Asgard exploding, and they're looking out at the ship and they're sad that like their home is being destroyed. And there's a moment where the rock guy's like, well, as long as the foundation holds, you can rebuild. And I'm like, that's actually a great line. And then it just blows up. And he's like, nope, nope, I'm sorry. It's gone forever. And I'm like, that's not the place for comedy. That's not. That just takes me right out of, like, how sad this scene is that Ragnarok has come and destroyed their home. And it's just so dumb, that I get taken out of it every 10 minutes. I'm like, where it needs to be is fine at times, but too much is not good.
Is that all the stuff that you didn't like?
Pretty much. It was the humor and inappropriate times. Other stuff, I mean, stuff. The battle between Thor and Hulk in the pit is one of my favorite fight scenes in comic movies ever. It's fantastic.
I did not hate the humor as much as you did.
Right.
I think with humor being such a strong thing in so much of the other movies, whether it be one or two throwaway lines in the first Avengers movies, or movies that are more or less outright comedies like the Guardians of the Galaxy movies with some, you know, it's a sci-fi comedy, essentially.
Right.
I think that it set the tone for what sort of movie that we were seeing in the first 10 minutes of the movie, where there's the gimmick with Thor hanging from the chain while Surtur is giving his whole speech.
Mm-hmm.
And then as Thor is, like, slowly spinning around, he's asking him to stop his speech while he's facing away from him.
Right.
And when Scourge is at the gate for the Rainbow Bridge, and he's trying to impress those young ladies, and then all of a sudden he opens the gate so Thor could get through but doesn't close it immediately, and the big giant decapitated dragon's head comes in and just sprays goop all over everyone.
Right.
From that, those two moments there, you should, like, to me, that set what the tone for this movie was going to be.
Right. Now, here's the thing, though. In that, like, where Thor, and we were discussing this at the shop today, where he's talking to Surtur, or whatever his name is, and he's spinning. That's the guy who's going to destroy Asgard. Mm-hmm. And Thor isn't even taking him seriously. Doesn't take him seriously a lot, but he's the big hand of God that destroys everything at the end. It's like, it's like, I can't take any, the only one that I could take seriously was Hela. Hela has one or two moments where I got scared that she was going to start doing stand up, but she didn't. Like, there's one quick scene where she says, what is it? Like, oh, you're my executioner. And in past days, that was people who executed their thing. Oh, and occasionally kill people. And I was like, dial it back, Hela. You're my favorite thing about this movie so far. And it's little stuff like that. So, like when you have, like, someone who's going to destroy Asgard, and Thor doesn't even, you're a joke to me. You're nothing but a joke. I'm going to swing in this chain, and you're beneath me. It kind of takes the luster out of him at the end as the giant monster who destroys Asgard.
For me, I read those scenes, that scene in particular about Thor, is this is the braggadocious Thor that no matter what the situation he's in, no matter how dire this is, I could beat any situation, so I'm going to treat this a little bit lighter than someone else would.
Fair enough. I'd see it differently. You know what I mean?
Right.
And the only thing I'm going to say is, how awesome it is to hear Immigrant Song by Led Zeppelin in the movie was fantastic. It gets a point, but it loses a point for using it twice because they could not pay enough to get the rights to Thunderstruck at the end of the movie, so they used Immigrant Song again. That's all I'm saying.
Boy.
That's all I'm saying.
So, but top to bottom, I enjoyed this movie quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
There were certain characters I could have done. Most of the characters we got just the right amount of. I feel as though, I know you didn't like Jeff Goldblum as the Games Master. I felt as though we could have gotten a little bit more of him. I felt like he didn't get, like, a real comeuppance. You know, he gets, like, the post-credit sequence where it's like, oh, you know, the uprising is, you uprose against me, but without me, there was nothing to uprise against. So let's call it a draw, you know? I wanted to see him get, like, a definitive comeuppance.
But, yeah, I guess. I don't know.
But for me, the two problems that I had with the film are effects-related and, Todd, I have a history, some would say a gimmick, if you will, of being nitpicky about stuff.
Is it wigs and special effects?
I'm about to pin the needle. Just so you know.
All right.
So one of the big things that happens at the end of the movie in the Thor fight with Hela is that Thor loses his eye.
Right.
Or, if you watch the movie, someone rubs some mud on his face. The effect of him losing the eye and what he looked like after he lost the eye was some of the saddest special effects I've ever seen in my entire life.
He had a scorch mark on his face.
Hmm. Anyway, and then, okay, so it was a scorch mark on part of his face, a good chunk of his face, and then they just, like, cleaned it off, and then he just has, like, a little nubbin over where his eye hole would have been. Just like his old man.
Mm-hmm.
So the effect on the eye, terrible. Now, Hela. I really like the effect on Hela. I thought Cate Blanchett did a really good job. I thought she looked really cool in the movie. I liked her whole thing of how she would put her helm on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where she would do the thing where she would, like, raise her hands, like, from underneath her eyes back over her head, and the big giant helm would come up. It was so cool looking, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, so they would do this for her in close-up shots from, like, the neck up, and in half close-up from the shoulders up, right? And underneath her eyes, like, kind of like, you know, in Batman Returns, where Michael Keaton, when he has the Batman cowl on, he always has the black gunk under his eyes.
Right.
And then when he rips it off to reveal who he really is, he doesn't have that gunk under his eyes anymore.
Right.
So she has the gunk under her eyes. Right?
Stop.
When she puts the... Well, no, listen. So she has the gunk under her eyes when she puts her helm on, which is cool, right? You gotta get, like, that full black look. Now, when we go to a bunch of scenes, whether it be CG scenes, whether it be stunt performer scenes, or whether it be shots of her further away in battle, the gunk is gone, and it's just like a white line separating where her eyes and the helm would end.
It's magic. It all works.
And I know in this movie we could legitimately say a wizard did it, because they go to his house, and they have him do it to find his dad. But it was just like... to me, I'm just like, that little tiny bit you couldn't have fixed. And every time that I saw her like that, and she would be in that, like, further away shot, and you would see the white under her eyes as opposed to the gunk that you would see in the close-up shots, I'm like, that's just laziness. That's just laziness. Unacceptable.
Okay.
And that takes off a full half star.
I think, well, you know, I can't complain about taking half. I took a whole star off for no Thunderstruck, but that's right. A whole other story.
A song that wasn't even supposed to be in the movie that you just wanted to be in the movie.
No, it was supposed to. I know. I have people on the inside, Joe.
Oh, okay. So, let's get into TV talk. Thank you for sticking with us. Was there anything else we needed to say about Thor?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Except, wait, he's got no hammer, which is going to be interesting going into Avengers. That's all I'm going to say.
He'll get a new hammer.
Not before Avengers starts.
He was sad because he missed his old hammer, so now he gets a new hammer.
Yes. But anyway, go ahead.
The lightning is inside of him, Todd.
It was inside of him all along.
That's right. Asgard's not a place. It's a people.
Though I will admit one of the best lines is, are you the god of hammers? No, you're the god of lightning and thunder, so suck it up, son.
Are you the god of hammers? That is a good line.
It is a great line.
Okay. So TV talk.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to talk about Flash, and I would like to talk about Legends of Tomorrow, but the show is going very long, and I'm not watching the clock. I just can have a sense of time.
Right.
So I thought Flash, we'll start there, was really good this week.
It was fun.
In a very fun, campy way. Some of the special effects on Dibny with his elongation were very suspect.
What?
Very, very Roger Corman Fantastic Four-esque.
No, they were better than Corman's.
They were on par, especially like the handshake scene and the scene where he gets hung out from the top of the building and his calves are now the size of human torsos.
I like when he farts. That's my favorite.
Oh, there you go.
And he was worried all his stuff down there wasn't where it should be.
Now, I don't know the actor who played Ralph Dibny.
Jim Carrey.
I was going to say, Hartley Sawyer. I hope he wrote a sizable check to the Jim Carrey estate.
for the mask. Yes.
Because he just liberally lifted Jim Carrey circa 1993 to 1997.
Mm-hmm.
And a great man once said before, if you steal from one person, it's plagiarism. If you steal from multiple sources or people, it's called research.
That's right. Copy an A, get an A.
And then the B plot was one of the greatest actors of our time, Danny Trejo.
Yes.
For no reason, decides, I'm going to kill Sisko, and I'm all about that. And right. I think Gypsy might be his daughter or something. But I don't care. Danny Trejo was on The Flash, and that was awesome.
Yes.
Fantastic. But yeah, I don't know what more to say about The Flash. At this point, you're either watching it or you're not. If you like the fun aspects of the show without tons and tons of relationship-y stuff, there's relationship stuff in here, but Machete is trying to kill one of the people involved in said relationship.
Yep. See, the thing I like about this season is remember we had the Flashpoint season last season where, you know, like I said, I wasn't a big fan of Flashpoint the comic. And then we had sad comics for New 52. And that's what that whole season felt like. And now this feels like the rebirth season and all the fun is back and I'm enjoying it. And that's like all I really have to say about that. That and we got Gingold. Soda, and his nose twitched when he smells a mystery. I'm like, boom, done, elongated man. That's all you need.
Yep.
Oh, and is this the title that gave away what the episode was about to you?
Yes.
Okay, because it was like the elongated whatever, and Joe was like, no, I'm sad because I know Dimby's going to be in this one.
Yeah, Dimby, whatever.
Yes.
But I thought it was really good. Episode, lots of fun, lots of laughs, suspect special effects, but what do you know?
Right. And now we could talk about Stranger Things, Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh. Todd?
Yes?
Did you know that when the Dominators are babies, they look like dancing baby Groot?
Oh, they do. And they love musicals.
Oh, my goodness. Good so morning. The cliffhanger from Good last morning. Episode was mm-hmm. Ray Palmer as a small child finds something in like a storage drain or something. And in the current time, he disappears because whatever that was ends up getting him killed because he ends up in a E.T. Stranger Things like situation where
A
man at point blank range just shoots a 12-year-old boy.
Oh, which is fantastic.
So they decide to go back to 1988 to try to figure out what's going on, and they find out that Ray Palmer, baby Ray Palmer, has befriended a baby Dominator. And they think that it's either the baby Dominator is going to kill him or the mama Dominator is going to come and find him and kill him. Little do they know it's the shadowy government people that are going to kill Ray Palmer because he has the baby Dominator. The B plot of this story is Eugene Grimby of the Wolf Council is using time-related stuff in secret. Jackson and Heatwave think it's because he's a spy for the Time Bureau, but it's really because he wants to spend time with his daughter at the birth of his grandson, and then this is the beginnings of how Eugene Grimby is going to be written out of the show so he can go back to his duties as the head of the Wolf Council.
Yes.
And then the C story is, now I've mentioned over the last couple episodes, I've been starting to sour a little bit on Nate Haywood, Sergeant Steel, Agent Steel, Commander Steel, whatever you want to call him. Every episode he's drunk, every episode it's something stupid, every
he's
episode
high.
He turns into the Steel Man and you see his mouth move and it just takes you out of life. This episode, he does not turn into a Steel Man. And he's super sleazy in trying to pick up Ray's mom. He has been redeemed.
And he doesn't pick up Ray's mom. He picks up a Dominator.
Right. Which was fantastic.
My favorite part about this was I know how much you hate wig work on this show sometimes, but the wig work / costume department to give us 80s stuff and then like, or whatever. And then the IROC shows up, the Camaro. I'm like, I'm in. I'm all in. This is my wheelhouse right here. And the one thing I did, though, is Ray not remembering his youth quite the way it was. Like, he thought his friends were, you know, friends, and they weren't. They were picking on him, and his mom is, like, sad, and he there were some tragic moments to see, like, grown-up Ray find some stuff out. And I was like, don't destroy the innocence of grown-up Ray.
Yeah, but it was like, this was the ultimate, like, here's every single trope in the history of TV tropes.
Right.
There was no new ground tread, but it was essentially just how all of these characters that we've known over the last three seasons or whatever it is deal with these very common TV and movie tropes. And I enjoyed it very much because of that.
I did. If it's stuff I like, nostalgia is great. That's what I like. Good morning. Good morning. So good.
All right. So last but not least is Walking Dead.
Yes.
So we've been kind of running a little bit cold in the last couple episodes of Walking Dead. And there's been discussion, both publicly and privately, I'm sure, in attempting to make me watch Riverdale instead of Walking Dead.
Right.
What were your feelings on this week's episode of Walking Dead?
Other than just like an interesting fight scene at times, I really didn't care much about anything. I mean, they telegraphed the whole thing a mile away where Ezekiel was like, nobody shall fall. And then the 50 caliber opens up and you're like, all right, yeah, we knew it was coming. You didn't lose anybody. There was the Rick and the guy, the young guy that he meets from season one that ended quick. I was like, I don't know. There was really nothing from this. And it seemed like, direction wise, it's all over the place from three different perspectives. There's too much going on. And I didn't even know that the guy Morgan is mad at is because he killed that kid from last season. It took me two episodes to figure that out.
Okay.
That's why Morgan hates that guy. Like, they didn't tell us that again. I completely forgot that. So I'm kind of cold on this week's episode.
Okay. I like the current Daryl and Rick dynamic.
Right.
Where Rick is trying to reason with people and make deals with people, where Daryl is just straight up killing dudes.
Right, because he knows what's what.
Right. And why does Rick not know what's up all of a sudden? Like, why all of a sudden do we have to be like, no, we have to take prisoners and we have to do this and, you know, we have to bring these back so we could talk to Maggie and all this other jazz, right?
Well, that's a different troop that brought all those prisoners back.
Right, but, like, it's all under Rick's directive.
Right.
Because he makes the deal, like, he's essentially, when he meets up with the guy from season one, he's essentially talking to him under the guise that we're going to make a deal and we're both going to walk out of here together.
Right.
And at the end of the episode where they're trying to figure out where the guns went to, like, where they got shipped to, Rick's like, put your gun down, tell us what you want, and we'll just give you one of these cards so you can get away. So the guy gives up whatever the information Rick wants, and then Daryl just straight up kills him.
Right.
So Rick is making some poor decisions, and I think this is going to start to build to the rift between Rick and Daryl for whatever reason. Dreamy Daryl, my apologies.
Yes, please get it right.
And there was one scene. You know how I'm nitpicky McNitpickerson?
No. Okay. Really?
This is on the good side of things. So, Morgan and Jesus and all those guys, they have the captives, right? They're bringing them down. They have them all tied up, right? And they're walking down that road. That one dude is needling Morgan. And then all of a sudden, not only do just zombies appear out of nowhere, but they start comically falling and rolling down that hill.
Well, there was a steep hill.
Oh, yeah, it was a real steep hill. If it looked like something I could navigate, now granted, I don't have the nimbleness and dexterity of a zombie.
But you do have the intelligence of one.
Listen, the tests haven't come back yet. But for some reason, I just thought that scene of the zombies like waves of zombies just falling down that hill was hilarious.
I did find that funny, too. It's like, oh, tumble, 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 tumble. Tumble, 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 tumble. Then they get up and...
But I'm going to ask you. It's not like I'm going to stop watching Walking Dead, but are you okay? It's not talking Walking Dead on the show no more?
And if it gets great, I could see us coming back, but I'm fine with cutting out a show. That's fine with me.
Now, I will say this. During the break on the other two shows, the Flash and Legend of Tomorrow.
Right.
Because I know they take like a little mini break in November, but that's not like the full break.
Right.
Stop looking at show titles.
What did I do?
Me. I did. Oh. So it looks like they go all the way up to December. Or no, all the way up to the end of November. Then they take a week off in December. And then they do one episode in December. And then they're off until what would be like February, maybe?
Right, sweeps.
Okay, so during that off time, let's talk about Riverdale.
Now, how talk about Riverdale? Like season two, you're just going to jump in?
Well, that's what we could talk about. Do I just jump in cold and not know what's going on? Or season one does exist on the old Netflix?
It does. And Riverdale season one is a short season. I think it's 10 or 12 episodes.
Let me go look right now.
Maybe 14 at the most, which is still almost half of what a regular season is. Because I know a couple of people were shocked that Riverdale was only a couple of seasons. I would rewatch Riverdale and go episode by episode with you. I love Riverdale. Good morning. Good morning.
It was 13 episodes.
I was in the wheelhouse. I said 12 and then I said 14. I pushed. That's up to you. We could discuss.
Right. Well, again, I'm talking about it on the show so people will hold our feet to the fire about it, you know?
Right, but what I mean is we have time to discuss how we want to do it if we do it. Because we're not going to jump right in with, because we still have two episodes of Flash and Legends to talk about each week.
Right.
So. And with that Walking Dead weight off our back.
Oh, well. Okay. So there's a plan going forward.
And did you know Outcast had a season two?
Oh, my goodness. I wonder when season three is coming out.
You never know.
No, I think that's going to sneak up on us, too. Mm-hmm. All right. So is there anything else that I missed?
No, I don't think you missed anything on this minute podcast that we just did.
Well, again, these shows are getting to be epics, and I think a lot of it is movies and, you know, TVs, and that's why I'm trying to trim things down, not only for our sanity, but also for the listener's sanity as well. Right. We at least got another week or two before we talk Justice League.
Right.
And then another month before Star Wars, so.
Do we have a week or two?
Justice League, for some reason, I think is coming out next Wednesday.
That's what I think. Yeah, I definitely think it's next week.
Right, but I'm not going to get a chance to see it until like that Sunday at the earliest.
Oh, so it'll still be for the podcast the week after, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you know what I'm asking? Gotcha.
Yeah.
And you should get those vibrating chairs.
No, we did that once.
And how your boy doesn't want to do it no more?
Well, he probably does, but unless he's paying up the $8 per
Is it
seat.
More?
No, Justice League comes out next Friday.
Right, but is it more for those seats?
Yeah. Or the normal matinee seats are $6. To mm-hmm. upgrade to the D-Box seats is an extra $8 on top of it.
Extra $8?
Yeah.
An extra, not yeah. $8.
Not, cool. It goes from $6 to $8. It goes from $6 to $14.
That's ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
If I get a vibrating chair for $14, I want some extras.
Well, I don't think those theaters exist around here anymore. That part of Times Square has been closed.
That's right. Disney bought them all.
All right, everyone. So thank you very much for listening to episode 371 of Longbox Heroes. For Todd, this is Joe saying we'll catch you all here next week. And thanks for listening.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boop!
Mario.
All right, it's week 10.
Week 10!
Now, we only had 3 right last week.
All right.
Yeah, well, no, that's not good. 3 out of 16. That's probably the worst we've done, but that's okay. We still have plenty of time to make it up. This is week 10. So we got like 7 more weeks to fix this. So, are we going to go for the first game, Seahawks or Cardinals?
Seahawks.
Are we going to do the Saints or the Bills?
Saints.
Are we going to do, what was that?
I'm just picking the ones that have like the higher ranks.
Right. Is that what you just want to do?
Yeah.
All right, so I'll help you with that. Packers or Bears?
Packers.
Okay. Bears. Bengals or Titans?
I should pick the Bears.
You want to change it to the Bears?
Yes.
So you're figuring this out. A lot of people never figured this out. Bengals or Titans?
Titans.
Browns or Lions?
Lions.
Steelers or Colts?
Steelers.
Vikings or Redskins?
Viking.
Jets or Buccaneers?
Buccaneer.
All right.
It's a Buccaneer.
Chargers or Jaguars? Chargers or Jaguars?
Jaguars.
Texans or Rams? That's this one.
Rams.
Cowboys or Falcons?
Cowboys.
Giants. Or 49ers?
As a giant.
Okay. Patriots or Broncos?
Patriots.
Last one. Dolphins or Panthers?
Panthers.
All right. Those are our picks for week 10. Ace is eating his cereal. What are you eating?
Crave.
Crave. It's his favorite cereal. All right. Thank you very much. You want to say anything to everyone listening?
Mm-mm.
No? All right. Good night, everybody.